Zito from 7th to 1st in the final event. You are a champion.
And Oleksiak has done it! The girl from the 6th has got 6 Olympic medals!
The substitute for Canada just about gets it through! It's a glory gold for Canada!
Kathy Lefty goes up to Graham, takes the lead, looks a winner, draws away from Graham and Mary. This is a famous victory, a magnificent performance. What a legend. What a champion.
It is Off the Podium, an Olympics podcast coming to you today for another athlete interview episode. An exciting one for you today. Back to a sport we haven't covered in a couple of years' time. 3 years nearly since we have last covered the sport of sport climbing. And today we are bringing it back. Oceana McKenzie, Australian Olympic sport climber, competed in the Tokyo Olympics where she finished in 19th place in the combined and is set to become a two-time Olympian later this year in Paris, has sealed her ticket to the Olympics in her second ever appearance at an Olympic Games in the sports second ever appearance. So she's 100% basically for every single Olympics that sport climbing has appeared at. And a great chat here with Osh, learning about her progression through the sport, how she didn't really feel she wanted to become a professional sports climber until she kind of did okay at a World Cup only a couple of years ago. Talks us through the process of Tokyo and everything that went about with that, through COVID, building climbing walls in a house and everything along those lines, that experience, how the result in Tokyo has spurred her on to even greater success. She's doing great things right now around the world in the sport, currently in the top 10 when it comes to sport climbing, if you don't mind. And learning just a little bit more about the mental side of the sport. It's a very mental sport climbing. As she explains, it's 50% physical, 50% mental. So what things she does in order to help her prepare for an event and upcoming Olympics and everything along the way. And a special added incentive to winning an Olympic gold medal. What is it that will help spur along the way? And it's not just Cherry, because Cherry does get brought up in this interview. And you know we're always going to bring up Cherry. So sit back, relax, and listen to our chat with Australian Olympic sport climber Oceana McKenzie. It's been nearly 3 years on this show since we've talked about the great sport of sport climbing. We had Tom O'Halloran on back in March 2021 in the lead up to the Tokyo Olympics, when we didn't even really know a lot about the sport. Then we saw it in Tokyo, fell in love with it, and yet for some reason we've taken a long time to get somebody else on the show from that sport. And it's such an honor to be able to break that drought today with our guest on the program. Finished 19th in Tokyo at the Olympics at the debut of sport climbing, and since then has just gone on to great things. Recently secured her spot for her second Olympics at Paris, and currently at the time of recording this, 7th in the world ranked heading into the Games, which I'm very excited to learn a little bit more about that and everything else in between. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show Oceana McKenzie. Osh, welcome to Off the Podium. It's a pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you so much. Excited to be here.
I'm excited to chat to you because I always feel bad when we go so long without talking to guests from certain sports. Obviously, we've got a few to cover here on Off the Podium with both Winter and Summer Olympics, but I mean, sport climbing, when we had Tom on, I knew nothing about it. I was completely new to the sport. He explained it so well. We watched it at the Olympics, fell in love with it, and it's such an incredible sport. So I want to start off actually by asking, have you found since Tokyo people like me have fallen in love with this sport? It's got a lot more interest now, and you're able to sell this sport that you've been doing pretty much all your life a little bit easier now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess a few years ago before Tokyo had happened, you would kind of tell people that you did climbing and they would be like, oh, is that like where you go outside and climb on rocks? And now when I tell people I do climbing, they're like, oh yeah, I also went to the, you know, my local climbing gym last weekend and climbed with my friends. So it's definitely getting a lot more popular, which is exciting.
Which is always, I guess, for these sports that for a long time maybe have certain, you know, those questions around it kind of helps. I mean, we've had a lot of, say, break dancers on the show in the lead up to Paris, and kind of they're talking about that exposure it's going to bring. So sort of it's great. Which, I mean, I guess, how did you get involved in the sport? I believe you started in it quite young, but tell us exactly how that happened.
Yeah, so I started when I was about 8 or 9. My whole family climbs. And I got into it through my sisters and my parents, where they were just climbing at the local climbing gym. And yeah, I tried it and then completely fell in love with it, started doing a few social comps and then national comps, and thrived in the competition scene. And then from then on, just, yeah, loved it. And it continued.
Climbed up. I want to use some climbing puns, but they'll probably fail miserably on this show. So, you know, please, you know, pull me up on those. But when you say sisters, yep. I believe you're one of six girls. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yes. I have five sisters and also four nieces.
Wow. So is this a case of just your parents were just wanting to, I mean, they wanted children and they kept trying for both, or it was a case of they just love girls and like, hey, keep bringing on the girls. I mean, six girls, that's a lot.
Yeah, I honestly have no idea how this happens. And then, yeah, I mean, with also my sisters, two of my sisters have kids, and then, yeah, one of them had three girls and the other one just had a girl. And actually, she's also pregnant again, so we'll see what happens there. I'm assuming it'll be a girl. We'll see.
It's going to be odd if it's a boy all of a sudden. You're going to be like, what's going on? Your dad will be like, yes, finally.
We really won't know how to deal with it.
That's crazy. That's a crazy thing. So did any of them, or are any of them climbers as well in terms of on the competitive side of things?
So no one else competes currently. One of my sisters competed a little while ago. But she is now actually a root setter, which is the person who creates the problems that we are solving in competitions.
Right.
She does it commercially. So she's very much in the climbing scene, but doesn't do competitions anymore.
I can imagine, does that help though? Like, can you sort of get straight from her mind about what it takes to set a course? And then can you maybe like, hey, sis, like, can you throw me a bone or two here for a course? You know what I like.
Oh, she's honestly one of like my biggest supporters and helpers in terms of mental training for competitions and yeah, working out like micro beta on the wall and body position, that kind of thing. She's always my number one person to go to.
So fantastic.
Definitely a big step for me. Yeah.
At what point when you sort of started climbing, did you become aware that this could be something to compete in, that there were competitions available and that this is something then that kind of you wanted to pursue something further in?
Yeah, I mean, I started doing youth nationals when I was about, I want to say maybe 11 or 12. And of course, at that age, I was just kind of doing it for fun, didn't really think about doing it as a career per se. But I would say after I did my second World Cup in 2019, where I made finals, I kind of thought that I could do quite well in it and obviously really enjoyed it and decided then that I wanted to make it my main goal.
I love that it takes going to a World Cup, doing well in it, go, oh, maybe all right, maybe I'm doing okay with this. I'll potentially pursue that, you know?
Yeah, I was like, oh, actually, this feels pretty good. All right, let's go.
May as well keep going on with it. Were you sporty in other kind of sports? Like, were you growing up playing a variety of, like most kids, you know, trying a hand at many other sports as well?
I guess I would say probably a little less than most other kids. I was actually homeschooled, so I guess I wasn't exposed to doing school sports like other people would be. But I mean, I did a tiny bit of ballet when I was younger. I did a little bit of tennis. But to be honest, I didn't really like them so much because it wasn't enough training for me. I was doing like younger, like kids tennis, and I kind of got bored doing the games. So once I got into climbing and kind of pushed myself to my limits every session is when I decided I liked it.
I think ballet might help in climbing, like the agility. Does that, like, can you kind of put some weird connect? I don't know about tennis, but ballet I can see working.
Yeah, I actually think, I mean, I only did it for maybe a year when I was really young, but I think it made me a lot more flexible, which really helps now. I mean, a lot of people ask how I became so flexible, and I think it's just from doing a lot of movements and sports that naturally made you more flexible, which helped now. Yeah.
In terms of the Olympics, obviously sport climbing only added to the Olympics recently. It was announced during Rio, which of course was before this moment when you were sort of like, hey, maybe I could do this a little bit further. But were you sort of exposed to the Olympics at all growing up? Was it something that you and your family would watch, or was this something that sort of only came about when you kind of thought, well, hey, let's pursue this a little bit further?
Yeah, I actually only first watched the Olympics when it was announced it was going to be climbing was going to be in it. I didn't really watch it when I was younger. My mum liked to watch it a little bit, but just certain sports like equestrian and gymnastics. But I was never really that interested in other sports once I started climbing. I was only eyes for that. So yeah, pretty much when it was announced in 2016, did I start to kind of watch it and get into it. And once I started watching it, I really started to like it.
Do you remember that period and kind of what it did for the community? I mean, I guess any new sport added for that sport is a big deal. You know, it's sort of touching what we said at the beginning, it adds that exposure to it. But do you sort of remember what was being said and the mood around the sport climbing community once it was confirmed that it was going to be an Olympic sport in Tokyo?
Yeah, I mean, there was so much excitement. I think climbing was quite small in Australia when it got announced. So it was quite shocking that we would even be represented. I mean, I know in Europe and Asia, it's a bit more popular and more developed. But in Australia, it was just super exciting that climbing was going to be progressing and getting the exposure that we all thought it deserved. So there was a lot of excitement around.
So when that light bulb moment went off, Ocean, you're sort of going like, okay, this is my career. I want to do well. Six, I believe, in that World Cup in 2019 as well. So equaling Australia's best ever performance on the female and male front, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. But did that sort of then set that target for you going, okay, this is what I want to do, and the Olympics are the pinnacle. So that kind of set the moment of, well, I've got to qualify for Tokyo now. This is my new goal.
Yeah, so when it first got announced in 2016, I didn't think I would be able to go to the Olympics. I don't know, I guess I thought I was maybe too young and not experienced enough. And yeah, it was just excitement that climbing was going to be represented. I didn't think I would be going. But yeah, I think in 2019, when we kind of started having the qualification events and I started performing better, it was like, okay, this can be a reality that I could go to the games. It was definitely an exciting moment, and yeah, when I qualified, definitely a big step in my career, professional career.
Did you qualify before the postponement, or was it sort of done after the postponement in 2020?
I qualified after the postponement, I think. Oh, that's a good question. COVID and lockdown is a bit of a blur.
I know,
timing.
We always like to black it out, but a little bit, don't we? So yeah, they were postponing like March of 2020, March, April. So had you okay, qualified sort of prior to that, or was it that came after?
Wow, dates are, I cannot remember right now.
I've stumped her right now.
Yeah, well, I definitely remember we were meant to have it at the end of 2019, I believe, and that's when the lockdowns really started to happen. And so our qualification event got pushed back. Oof. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to look that one up.
That's all right. Let's skip to the fun part then of you building a climbing wall in your garage then during lockdown, because that is where I think we can sort of move that to. Because I love hearing from athletes around this. We've heard of many athletes who have built makeshift, you know, swimming pools, skate ramps, all these sort of things, obviously, in that moment. So to have this built in your garage, I mean, in all honesty, Osh, that sounds like something you probably want to have anyway, right? That just sounds like something fun that you want to have a climbing wall in your garage.
Yeah, so I actually originally had my climbing wall up before the lockdown, but we just extended it.
Right, okay.
And added a few other things in, yeah. But yeah, very, very grateful for that climbing wall. I mean, I had some rough and emotional sessions on there, training by myself during lockdown. I mean, usually my dad would come and have sessions with me, which was really nice. but yeah, very grateful for that wall that I could still climb and train and everything.
Did that end up helping you or hindering you that year delay? Because obviously every athlete's got a different perspective of that. Some it's helped clearly because, you know, that extra year of training, but others, you know, they were in a zone heading into 2020 before the postponement. But I mean, how do you reflect back on that period about helping or hindering you in Tokyo?
Yeah, I guess I would consider a bit of both. In that period, I definitely got a lot physically stronger because I could only train, and I was doing a lot of strength training, but I would say that my mental state kind of definitely got hindered. I mean, my motivation for climbing went down. My enjoyment for it went down a bit. But ultimately, I think that having that hard experience and having to go through it, and then the aftermath of the Olympics, I kind of got a bit of, well, quite a bit of burnout after that. So having to deal with that made me a stronger athlete, and I had to build my confidence. And I think that that has helped me a lot for the last season and hopefully this season. So a bit of both, I would say.
Do you also, through that period, work with, say, like a sports psych to kind of help you through those periods of doubt or sort of moments like that in what can help you mentally?
Yeah, I did a little bit. I think something, like, I didn't do it enough, which is why I think I didn't deal with it very well. I would say, yeah, I definitely could have dealt with that a bit better, and that's why afterwards I had to do quite a lot of work. So if I would go back, I would probably, yeah, definitely get a bit more support.
Because it does seem like a very mental sport outside of the physical aspect, particularly in the strategy. Because I think I read you described it as solving a puzzle when it comes to certain aspects of it. So I can imagine that mental training and ability and everything along those lines is almost as important as, if not equally as important, as the physical side of things.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of the time we say climbing is 50% mental and 50% physical. Yeah, definitely one of the biggest things is on the day being prepared to, yeah, solve puzzles and deal with, say, especially with the combined format like it was in Tokyo, where you have speed, boulder, and then lead. So if one of them doesn't go so well, you then have to come back and still be positive for the next discipline, which can obviously be quite hard. So yeah, it's definitely a lot of mental strategy and resilience.
Before I touch on the format in Tokyo, does that give you then an excuse that you can just go to your local hobby shop and buy a bunch of puzzles, and that you can literally just be like, this is training. This is training, everybody. I need to do puzzles because this is part of me going to the Olympics.
To be honest, I actually do not enjoy puzzles very much.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, surprisingly. Solving them on the wall, I love it. Give it to me every day. Puzzles on the ground, yeah, I don't quite have the same patience for it like I do in climbing.
Wow. Do you do something else like a Sudoku or crosswords or, I don't know, just something else that'll really kind of train the brain, something else?
I mean, I learned Japanese, which, hey, I feel like, look.
That counts.
Yeah. And actually during lockdown, I was doing a lot of juggling. I don't know if it's kind of the same, but it's, I guess, actually quite good for climbing because you're getting the hand-eye coordination while also having to think about it. And
yeah,
it's also physical, which is what we usually have to do in climbing. But yeah, I mean, I just enjoy the hands-on solving the puzzles and doing the moves on the wall.
You've opened a can of worms here. I'm intrigued. What are you juggling? Are you juggling just like bowls? Are you going on to knives and flames? Like, I mean, how good are you at this?
Yeah, unfortunately, just with the balls,
right,
for the moment.
How many can you do? Yeah. How many? What's your maximum you've gotten to?
I think we're getting a little far. Just three. I'm not a good juggler.
Just three. That's still pretty good. Most of us struggle with two, Osh. Come on. Like, that's, you know, put it on your blog. I've been watching your blog in the lead up to this. Can we see some of this? Like, can I put a request out there for some Oceana McKenzie juggling on the blog?
Okay, I'll put it in the notes.
Good. Please do. Please do. I always like it when our guests have notes coming out of an interview. But, I mean, the format in Tokyo, of course, was this combined format, which obviously we're seeing different in Paris. But, I mean, was that a common format, or was this purely the Olympics that did this? Because obviously speed, lead, and bouldering are all different, particularly the speed element to the other two. But, like, I mean, was this completely new? Had this been done before?
No. So, I mean, in the youth categories, it's a bit more common to do the, like, all three disciplines, because we do the World Youth Championships, which is where you can participate in all three. But when you get into the Open World Cups, it's very rare that you would do all three. You tend to get people doing lead and bouldering together, and then speed is something separate. So it was definitely different for everyone to have to do all three combined, especially in the same day, you know, all in a row. And yeah, I think it was interesting to experiment with that, but I'm definitely looking forward to Paris having speed separate, because I think, you know, everyone can definitely show their best this way. Yeah.
Because you obviously then have climbers who, like, they're a speed specialist, correct, who would not compete in a bouldering elite. And then someone like yourself, who's obviously more on the bouldering side of things, that you're, I guess, going to avoid speed if you have to. Like, I mean, that's not something you're really going to train or compete in if you don't have to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, I definitely fell for the speed climbers a lot during the Olympics because, I mean, they are incredible athletes, like doing 15 meters in 4.9 seconds and then having to do lead and bouldering, which is, I mean, it's working completely different muscles. It's a whole other thing. So I'm definitely excited to see what they can do having their own discipline. For me, I really enjoyed doing speed, actually. It was really fun, but it's a bit much to do all three, and I prefer lead and bouldering. So,
yeah. Very happy then once they separated them in come for Paris, which, I mean, yeah, watching it in Tokyo again, coming from somebody who's not seen this sport at all, and the first thing you see is climbers doing this in like 15 seconds, just speeding up a wall like Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, just absolutely an insane introduction. Obviously, Tokyo, a very unique Olympics, and we always like to find out those just sort of experiences outside of the competition side of things as well as the competing. But how was it for you getting into Tokyo? I mean, obviously a lot of restrictions. Was there much of a village life that you were able to experience to the best of your abilities? Things like pin trading, bumping into other athletes, you know, food hall stories, anything along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely unique. We unfortunately couldn't go and watch other sports during this games, which was definitely something that I was looking forward to and I'm so excited to do in Paris. But we did do all the pin swapping. The Australian village, well, the Australian building was absolutely amazing. We had our own like barista, our own food hall, like pretty much anything you could want, you could get, which was amazing and such a change from kind of the Australian climbing scene. We don't get a whole lot of support just because there's not a lot of funding in it. So having that was just wild. And yeah, the food hall was insane, like huge. It was crazy seeing so many athletes around, and yeah, the whole village experience was so cool. And we, you know, they in Tokyo, they did an amazing job. We had a hairdresser, like they had somewhere you could get your nails done. It was very, very fun and exciting.
Yeah. I always love the barista stories because this was so, I mean, we've had athletes from other countries on this show say they would try to sneak into Australia house basically because they had the barista, and I've heard the barista's returning for Paris as well. So, you know, good news on that front. But
I was hoping.
I just whispers, Osh. I've heard it. I've heard they're returning. But I mean, like little things like that though must, again, like you said it, that for your sport, you're not really exposed to a lot of this, not even something like a Commonwealth Games or something like that where you can experience a multi-sport event to kind of see this. So does that, like on that mental front, does that kind of just add a bit of a spark? Because you're kind of surrounded by all of these amazing things that on a regular World Cup or a regular tour, you're not seeing, and exposed to other athletes and hearing their stories and just kind of everything that the Olympic life, as you're touching on there, does bring.
Yeah, I mean, it was quite overwhelming, I would say, especially coming out of lockdown and kind of not really being around any people, just in my house. It was a shock, but yeah, I mean, so exciting, really cool, and just seeing so many different athletes, like seeing, yeah, so many different bodies around and what people are eating and what people are doing pre-competition, you know, people running around the village, people doing all this fun stuff. It was very interesting to see. And yeah, I'm very excited to enjoy it once more again in Paris.
What was your favorite pin that you got?
I think I got one from Argentina that I really liked.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Does it come very like competitive then too? Like, oh, I've got an Argentina, I need to get this one. You're seeing what your teammates and that are getting and you're trying to sort of like add to it?
Yeah. I mean, if you see a pin that you like, you're like, okay, where'd you get that from? I'm going to try and see if I can go to those countries. But the Australian pins were very popular with the kangaroos.
Ah.
So that was good. That's a pro.
Because you're only designated an amount, right? And then you obviously want to probably keep one and a couple for, you know, yourself and your friends and family. So then it's kind of what you've got to ration them if they're that, you know, because mm-hmm. I'm guessing you kind of want to save a couple if all of a sudden you see that rare one that you've been trying to find, right? It's a bit strategic, the pins. Yeah.
It's true. It's actually, you kind of, when you're going to swap one, you save the kangaroos and you give the other ones, if people will take them, just in case, you can save up your kangaroos for even better ones. So there's a bit of strategy to it.
I like that. Did you do any, sorry, I'm getting really sidetracked because I just love hearing these stories, but do you do uniform swapping? Because I know that it also becomes a bit of a thing too when it comes. And I always love hearing the stories that a lot of athletes try for Team USA because they're apparently not allowed to trade their uniform. So if you get a Team USA piece of clothing, it's like it's very sought after.
Okay. I didn't know that one. We do it a lot in World Cups, especially in the youth comps. So we're always trading shirts. Like, it's like the biggest thing just after the climbing. Like, everyone's so excited about it. I didn't do any uniform swapping at the games, but I'm surprised the US doesn't do any swaps. They get a lot of uniforms.
They do. And it's Ralph Lauren, right? So it's like it's very fancy. But I've had that with a few athletes on this show who said they try to get Team USA stuff because it's something that – and I've never had it confirmed by an American Olympian, and we need to do that, that they're apparently not permitted to trade. So
I see. Maybe I'll have to try and like communicate with one of my friends already and see if we can –
get it going there. Which, just on that, when you're like trading at say World Cups and that, is it a bit say like in soccer? So if you're playing against Messi, you're gonna want to like after the game try and find Messi. If you're playing against Sam Kerr, I'm gonna get Sam Kerr. So like, do you go to like the goats of climbing and try to like trade a jersey? Is that a thing?
Definitely, but I would say we go more for countries,
right?
So not so people. But I mean, I would say the Japanese, for me, it's definitely the Japanese is like the most popular one because they also don't usually trade so much. Same with the Korean team. And I think Slovenian was quite popular when I was in the youth. So those are like the top three. And I guess they're kind of, definitely Japan and Slovenia are the two top nations.
I was going to say Slovenia, so, like that's their bag, isn't it? Climbing. That's, you know, they're, of all the countries in the world who wanted a sport added to the Olympics, it was Slovenia and sport climbing, right? Like,
yes, definitely.
Just adding it there. Yeah. It's like if, you know, they said, hey, guess what? Australian football is going to be at the Olympics in Brisbane. We'd be like, done, tickets for a gold.
Yeah, that's
Let's lock it in. The competition side of things itself. So 19th overall, I mean, do you set yourself a target going into the Olympics to be like, I'm going to make finals, I'm going to medal? I mean, kind of what did you set yourself and how did you leave Tokyo feeling after your performance?
Yeah, so I think before Tokyo, I didn't really have, I mean, I had some expectations. And I definitely left the mats feeling like I didn't give my best and I couldn't give it my all, which was quite frustrating. This year, I have some pretty set goals that I want to make finals and I'm confident in my abilities to do that. But yeah, I would definitely say leaving Tokyo, I have some revenge that I'm ready to give back for.
I like that. Some revenge. Yeah. That really spurred you on. Because it is always a case of if you have not just an Olympics, but of course any event where maybe you leave not feeling you did what you could do, that spurs you on, doesn't it? It's always that motivation that kind of will help you towards that next. So there's always a positive you can take from a negative.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, ready to change up all the things I did wrong in Tokyo and give it my all and leave the mats. Even if I leave the mats not making the finals, but feeling like I put in 100% and did my best, then I'm happy. So
you mentioned sort of around that burnout feeling and everything that came from Tokyo and sort of working through that. Was there anything specific that came from that and sort of subsequent competitions that led to that feeling? And sort of was it something that you needed to take a break from? I mean, kind of, was it working with sports? Like, sort of, how did you recover from that to push towards what will soon be your second Olympic appearance?
Yeah, so I definitely, after the Olympics, I had 2 weeks off due to having to do quarantine.
Forced 2 weeks off.
yes, which I do think was quite good for me mentally to just kind of decompress and, you know, give my body a rest. But I would say the biggest thing for me coming back from my burnout was I went overseas to Asia, to Japan and Korea with my sister for 3 months, where I just focused on having fun climbing and building up my confidence as much as possible. And yeah, she was a big help with that. I mean, mentally, and giving me tips and making sure that I was having fun and yeah, doing what I loved was the, I think during lockdown, I was doing everything I thought would give me the best performance in Tokyo, when really I was just forcing myself to do a lot of things rather than doing what I loved and enjoying the whole process. Unfortunately,
is there a case with it? You touch on the word fun there. Like a lot, like most people would rock climb, sport climb, whatever you want to call it, for fun. Like that's something that it's a recreational thing. It's a social activity. Obviously, that's your career. It's your profession. Are you still able to just be like, this Saturday, I'm just going to go have a fun climb, or like go to a mountain and do that sort of stuff? Is it possible for you, Osh, I guess what I'm trying to ask, to separate the competitiveness with, say, the fun aspect of climbing, or do you just sort of still combine the fun with your competing and that makes you compete better?
Yeah, exactly. I know that I have the best performances when I'm having fun and when my training is fun. And luckily, I love climbing so much and I love training and I love working hard that those two do come together. And yeah, I mean, it shows so much in my performance and in my training. If I'm not having fun, I'm not performing well. So as soon as and a lot of the time, you know, like even a few weeks ago, I wasn't enjoying training so much and I'm kind of like, oh, what's going on? Usually I'm loving this. And as soon as I changed my mentality to just, okay, this is, you're just having fun this week. You know, don't think about anything else. Just enjoy climbing. It changes so much and I'm already climbing so much better and I have so much more confidence. And yeah, it's wild how much that mental switch can do for my climbing.
It made it sort of, a bit of lightheartedness about doing things like puzzles and that sort of stuff. But do you have kind of activities that give you a bit of an R&R, be it listening to some music, reading a book? I know you're into baking, for example. Like, I mean, are there sort of those moments when you're getting a bit of that burnout and you're needing to switch the mind into that fun mode that can kind of take you there?
Yeah. I mean, I would say for me, I kind of have the routines now that as soon as I kind of acknowledge it and understand it and just say, okay, you need to just take a step back and start just climbing until you're not having fun anymore in a session, or you're tired. That kind of is enough for me to acknowledge it and just say, okay, we're having fun. I can kind of just start to do that. Stop forcing myself to do things that, you know, or always working on my weaknesses or something like that, where I just do the things that I find fun is enough. But yeah, also trying to have that balance outside of life where, yeah, I'm doing more baking. I also love to read. You know, I love hanging out with my family and friends and chatting and that kind of thing. So making sure I'm taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture is enough.
What do you like to bake? What's your go-to dish when it comes to baking?
I would say at the moment, banana bread is very popular.
Nice.
In our house. Yeah. Yeah. But I also love to make cookies and pretty much anything, cakes, that kind of thing.
all the good stuff, which is
all the things.
And I guess, does that help with the training? Like, I mean, it's fuel, right? Carbs, fuel, sugar, like you need it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love to make like bliss balls for training. I love to make cookies and cakes. Yeah. It can help a lot. It's good meal prep. Plus it's fun and it tastes good.
So yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's great.
Ticks all the boxes. That's what you need to do with that. 2023, I just want to go through some of your results here. A very strong year when it came to the World Championships in bouldering, 7th in Switzerland, the Climbing World Cup in Lied in France, 10th, another 7th in a World Cup in bouldering in Czechia, 5th at the World Cup in Italy, finished the season overall 7th in the world when it comes to bouldering. I mean, how does that feel to hear that out loud? Do you get used to it? You're the top 10 in the world at something, Osh. Like that's pretty good to hear that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I guess I got a little bit of goosebumps, actually.
Do you want me to keep saying it? You are in the top 10 in the world in something. I mean, not even the top 10, 7th. That's 7th, all right? Seriously, that obviously is a pretty good, and off the back of a fantastic season. I mean, the confidence coming into now an Olympic year must be extremely high.
Yeah, I mean, I had so much fun last year, and honestly, the results were just like a cherry on top, because I think in previous years I hadn't decided to, or didn't have the funds to do the full season, and last year I decided to do that, and it just made such a difference, just going traveling around to all the competitions, having fun, enjoying it, and then also having good results was just, I mean, it's kind of what you dream of as a sports person. It's just so good when you're having fun and getting the results that you want. And so, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of confidence coming into this season because, again, I'm enjoying training. I'm having fun. There's always the nerves that, you know, coming off a good season, you're like, hopefully I can continue that. What happens if I don't? Who knows? You know, there's always a scary feeling. But, yeah, you know, I'm doing everything I can and hope that it's enough.
But knowing, obviously, that ticket is booked to Paris. You officially qualify at the end of 2023. And at the time of recording this, we are literally recording this on the day you were formally announced alongside Campbell as team number 4 and 5 for the Australian Olympic team for 2024. So that ticket is secured. I mean, does that help a lot as well, knowing that, I mean, we speak to so many athletes who can't, you know, secure their quota and their position until literally weeks before the Olympics, but you're there now. So does that help in sort of the competitions in the lead up to Paris?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big relief, and it obviously means that there's something I have to look forward to this year. For me, it's kind of like as soon as I reach the goal, the next that one's already gone, and I'm already at the next, looking forward to the next one. So yeah, it's exciting, but then now I'm already like, okay, now it's time to perform well in Paris. So I qualified, that was my goal. Now it's like, all right, next, let's do well at the World Cups, do well in Paris, and do our best.
So what is, I guess, the calendar now between now and Paris? How many World Cups? I mean, is there, say, a World Championship before Paris? I mean, sort of what have you got on before the Olympics?
Yeah, so this year we have no World Championships, but I'm doing a few World Cups before the game. So I'm doing, there's the start in April in China, where we have a lead and bouldering World Cup. I'll also do a bouldering World Cup in the US. Then I'll go to Austria for a lead and bouldering World Cup, and then one more lead World Cup in France before the games, and then a few after, depending on how I'm feeling.
So we're talking, you're in Switzerland right now. Do you get to come to Australia before July, or are you purely like overseas the entire time now and you've got to wait till Australia till like August, September?
Yeah, so the plan is actually to not go home currently. I've been away since the end of November.
Wow.
Yeah, and so the plan is, I mean, there's a comp in Korea in October that I quite want to go to. So I think I won't be home until October. There's the maybe plan that I will go home for a week, maybe after China or something like that, because I am feeling a little bit homesick. So it would be nice. But we'll have to see how the funds are going and yeah, see if it's best for me to do that for the year.
Just on that whole funds thing, Osh, let's just put it this way. Olympic gold medalists get flown back business class by Qantas, by the AOC. So when it comes to the welcome home parade with that gold medal around your neck come like September, you know.
True.
If you just think there's motivation, if you're homesick, just a gold medal might help bring you back sooner.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe I should just win. That's a good plan. Yeah,
just win. Just, I mean, just if you have to. Okay. Like,
okay, all right.
You know,
that's settled then.
It just, nice. it might be a good thing if to win an Olympic gold medal. I've heard it's good. You know.
So. Yeah, just so I can go home business. That's really the only thing.
That's what you want. I mean, have you flown business class before? What motivation to get a ticket?
Never. Oh, I would love it. Oh.
Yeah, I'm going on past Olympics. I'm telling you now, if Qantas cheap out on Olympians after these Olympics, like people are going to hate them even more. So come on, Qantas, stick to that going. But I believe you've not even been to Paris before. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. I've been to two different places in France. So Chamonix and Briançon, which they hold two lead World Cups, but never been to Paris, which I'm actually going to for the first time in about 2 weeks or a week and a half.
Wow.
For a training trip. So, yeah, I'm very excited.
Is there going to be a test event that you're aware of? Like, will there be a chance to check out the course before the Olympics?
I don't think so. No.
Wow. Nope. Which, does that make it extra challenging, extra exciting? I mean, going back to that whole puzzle sort of strategy side of things, that you're just not even going to remotely see this course beforehand?
I mean, we're pretty used to it in climbing because obviously when we are doing competitions, we never see what the climbs look like. We only see it once we get out onto the mats, and for bouldering, we have 5 minutes to look and climb the boulder. And then for lead, we get only 6 minutes observation before we do the route. So we're quite used to kind of getting out onto the mats and it being the first time we've seen the course, so to say. So I'm not super worried about it. And we'll also get some pictures of the angles of the wall and the warm-up area and that kind of thing. But yeah, it'll be the first time we're seeing the official course.
Same for everyone else though, right? Like it's not just they're mm-hmm. deliberately doing this for the Aussies. Like, you know, everybody else is the same going into the event.
I mean, yes and no. So, I mean, they can, because we get the wall angles before the games and the hold selection, a lot of people will be kind of actually building or training on the wall angles and having similar, like I said before, the route setters, the people who put up the courses, will know those people, and then they will set in certain areas and people will climb on their style of setting, if that makes sense.
Right.
So, I mean, it's kind of similar to every other sport where it's a little bit unfair if you can't get access to those types of things. And definitely in Australia, we don't get access to a lot of that. But really, on the day, the courses that we get, no one has seen before. So we're all on the same page there.
Which, though, in 8 years' time, come Brisbane, that, you know, then it's Australia's turn to kind of have that little advantage, which, I mean, for a sport like sport climbing, you know, given the exposure we've already touched on, what it got after Tokyo, and it will grow. We've obviously seen it's been confirmed for LA, so there will be at least one more Olympics, and we hope that it will continue on to Brisbane. But let's just say it is going to be in Brisbane. Home Olympics aside, I mean, to have that level that it would then bring to the country in a home Olympics, I mean, how much do you think that can help the sport grow in the next 8 years?
Yeah, I mean, I hope a lot. There's already talk, I think, about, you know, trying to make connections and chat with people at this Olympics in terms of the Brisbane Olympics. So hopefully it can bring a lot of, I think, also just recognition to the climbing community in Australia, because it's so far away. People don't really think of Australia very much. You know, I'll even talk to my friends and they're like, oh, you know, like how long, it's so quick for you to get to Japan, right? And I'm like, I mean, yeah, it's like a 10-hour flight. And they're like, 10 hours, you know, that's so far. How long is it to get to Europe? So just bringing the attention to Australia will be quite exciting, and having people in Australia would be pretty cool.
Does it spur you on then too, like thinking that there's a prospect of a home Olympics in your future? I mean, you're still so young, Osh. I mean, you're going into an Olympics, your second Olympics at what, the age of 21, you'll be 22, I believe. So, I mean, you know, still so young. So if it come Brisbane, you're barely going to be 30. So, I mean, like, there's that in your future. But does it spur you on kind of to think that that could be a prospect in your future?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I'm kind of always just excited about all competitions. So, you know, doing World Cups in all these years is super exciting. Doing Olympics is super exciting. So having it in my home country would be, yeah, I mean, something I can't even really imagine. It would be wild. So many family members and friends could come, and yeah.
You wouldn't have to be overseas for like 11 months, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have to with jet lag. It would just, it'd be crazy.
Just there in your backyard. Now, we're going to wrap up with a set of get-to-know-you style questions in just a moment, but a couple of things before I get to that. Campbell has obviously been announced alongside of you and qualified for that. I'll say right now, and spoil it for our listeners, we've got Campbell on the show next week. So, I mean, we're covering all the bases for sport climbing. So two aspects to this. First part, how is it to kind of be the mentor / veteran alongside him as now a two-time Olympian, and he's, what, a few years older than you? And secondly, can you give me any nuggets that I can use for my interview with him that perhaps I can surprise him as sort of a question? They'd be like, how the hell did you know that?
Well, I mean, for starters, it's so exciting to be going with Campbell. We've been climbing together for years and years. I mean, we grew up training together in the youth. And for starters, he's my mentor, you know, like, even though this is my second Olympics and I can hopefully give him some tips for this, He's always taught me so much.
Pin trading.
Yeah.
Know. Yep.
Yeah. Super grateful for that. But anything for Campbell? I'm not sure.
You can have a think and flick me a note if you need to.
Yeah, because I'll have to.
I do love to surprise our guests with sort of like a nice little nugget that they'll probably be like, how did you know that?
How did you know this?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll have a think and I'll come back to you.
We do our research on this show, or kind of like, I guess, cheat when it comes to that. The other thing that I've got to bring up for you now, this is a bit of extra motivation that we're giving to all our guests ahead of Paris. I'd like you to introduce you to our show's mascot. Now, this is our mascot. First of all, I don't like to reveal straight away what he is, but can you guess what he is, first of all?
A chair?
He's a chair, yes. Congratulations. His name is Cherry. Now, he's a little bit battered and bruised, as you can see. But we're just trying to see, like, in terms of motivation, could you use Cherry as, like, extra motivation to get that golden business class ticket after Paris?
Oh, absolutely. It's given me all the motivation I need.
That's all we need. How do you think he'd go at sport climbing? I mean, speed's probably out of the equation, but, I mean, probably a bit more strategic. He's a bit flexible. I mean, these legs can go in places that maybe a lot of humans can't, so...
Looks like he's got a bit of reach on him, so I think he'd do pretty well.
Yeah,
he'd do pretty well.
He's already got a medal, so but
oh wow, he's gone biz class already. I'll see you in the business class, Cherry.
he's very like bougie. He's business class or nothing for Cherry. But as we keep saying, Osh, once we sort of work out some other things with this, we'll send you a Cherry in some capacity, and you can use it as sort of a lucky charm come Paris.
Wow. I cannot wait.
Even if it's a pin, even if it's just a pin that you can trade, that'll be more sought after than those damn kangaroo pins.
True. It'll be the vintage pins.
Hey, you're welcome. Now, as I said, Osh, we're going to close this out with a set of get-to-know-yourself questions that we put to all our guests. As always, this is based off a Team Canada questionnaire that they gave their athletes ahead of Rio and Pyeongchang. Simple questions, simple answers, and if you wish to... There is a drawing element. How are your drawing skills? I'll first of all ask that.
Oh, not good.
Not good. Great. That's even better. Not if good. You feel the urge in between now and the Olympics, you can do it. The options are to draw a picture of yourself, draw a picture of a Canadian animal, or as we say often, an Australian animal. And what would the coolest Olympic medal look like? I'm basing these answers off a Canadian beach volleyball player by the name of Heather Bansley, and she's drawn a picture of stick figure with a medal around her neck. So stick figures are acceptable. So you know,
cool.
Just put it on the list if you really want to. But I'll start off with the first question for you today. What is your favorite Olympic moment?
I would have to say getting my nails done with my coach at the Olympic Games with the Aboriginal flag.
I like that. Nice. And that was done by like the village nail artist?
Yeah. And they did an amazing job.
And so and that was the art that you had when you were climbing in Tokyo as well?
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah, that's kind of like a bit of a tradition that I do before every World Cup now as well. My sister and I paint the Aboriginal flag on my nails.
Nice. So, yeah. Okay. There you go. I like that. I like hearing that. The best candy in the world is?
Oof. Okay. First thing that came to my mind was like peanut butter cups, which is interesting because I don't eat them very often, but yeah, yum.
Okay. Well, I like these answers where they come straight to your head and you just go with it. That's usually the best. I like that. Your favorite sandwich is?
Chickpea tuna.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. It's not really anything like tuna, but that's just what we call it.
So this, I'm guessing it's made of chickpeas, right? Like, is that...
Made of chickpeas, yes. And actually like mapped with hummus and nutritional yeast and a bunch of flavorings and you have with avocado and lettuce.
See, you say all that and it just makes it sound even nicer. So you get along with our co-host, Colin. He's, I know you're vegan. He's celiac, so he obviously has to avoid gluten and all that kind of stuff. So he has these, like, fascinating concoctions of food that he eats. So,
I'm gluten intolerant, so I tend to stay away from it. So there we go.
You and Colin can share recipes together. There you go.
I love it.
That works. In your spare time, I think we've kind of touched on this, what do you most like to do?
Yeah, so I love to bake. I love to read. I love to just hang out with my family and chat. I love to walk around town, do yoga.
Vlog? You've got a vlog now?
Vlog. Yes, I have a YouTube, which has been pretty fun.
Does it get addicting? Like once you start doing it, you know, like all of a sudden you get a few people watching and sending you questions and things like that. You just want to keep doing it more.
Yeah, it's pretty fun actually. And I'm super lucky that my sister, I mean, I talk about my sisters all the time. They're like some of my biggest supporters, so shout out to
Give
them.
a shout out to your sisters.
Yeah, give a shout out.
You know.
They deserve it. Yeah, so she does all of the videoing for me, which is super handy. And I think it keeps it pretty authentic when someone else is just kind of carrying the phone around and we're just doing what we're doing. So that's really fun.
And I'm guessing too, also when you're home hanging out with your dogs, I believe you've got some
Yeah.
dogs.
Yes, I have a dog, Mina, a Shih Tzu cross Maltese, which I miss her so much. And one of my sisters also has a French bulldog, Mochi. And I miss them so much. Oh, one of the biggest reasons I want to go back home as well as seeing the family.
Motivation for the gold medal, exactly, to get home like earlier there, which again on your Instagram page, you've got sort of the story running there, kind of showing, which FaceTiming, that's a thing with Mina as well. Like, do you?
And Snapchat, we have a
Oh.
group chat with mum and dad called Mochi Mina Madness, and they send videos and photos every day.
Wow. I mean, that's
Keeps
motivation
me.
right there, right? Like,
Yeah, it
keep
is.
it going. I love that. Your favorite sports movie is?
Oh, to be honest, I don't watch a whole lot, but there's a climbing one that came out recently or just after the Olympics by four of the athletes. I think it's called Climbing for Gold, or can't remember the name exactly, but that was really, really cool. Yeah, it was four of the female athletes and they kind of did their journey into the Olympics and
Great.
it was a really great watch.
I love it when sort of that we're in that golden age of sports documentaries and sports sort of shows like we're seeing Netflix and that. So I have to check that out. I was thinking of like climbing movies like Vertical Limit and Cliffhanger, and I always like rated on James Bond as James Bond climbed in one of the movies in For Your Eyes Only. So
Yeah, I guess he has, but
yep.
maybe not quite
Not quite the way that you do. I think you kick James Bond ass, let's be honest, when it comes to
style.
climbing. So But
That's some
hey,
pretty risky stuff.
yeah, exactly. As a kid, your favorite sports team was?
I really didn't watch many other sports, so I guess I would have to say like climbers, and I would say Jan Ugambret, and I was really inspired by Mina Markovic as well when I was
Okay.
younger.
I was going to say, growing up in Melbourne, weren't exposed to the dark world of AFL and forced upon a team at all.
No, not at all. I
Cool.
really didn't watch sports. Dad loved it, but
Who's your
yeah,
dad
didn't
go
watch
for?
me. Well, he mostly watches rugby
Right.
and he always goes for the All Blacks because he's originally from New Zealand.
Oh, that makes
So
sense then. I was about to say, I was about to call him a traitor, but he's from New Zealand, so that's fine.
yeah,
No,
no.
that's completely okay.
Die hard All Blacks
That's
fan.
all right then. What is your favorite workout?
Well, I guess I would have to say maybe campusing
Okay.
for climbing. It's, I guess, quite a specific workout where you're pretty much doing moves without your feet on the wall. So it's all upper body and using momentum is really fun. But I also, I mean, I love anything climbing specific. I mean, I also love running. I love doing endurance drills on the wall. So getting like really, really pumped. Yeah,
The beauty of
so many
this is,
things.
I love the answers to see you start smiling when you start talking about it, so you know you love it,
Yeah.
right? Like, so that's
Yeah, I
straight
do.
away you just like start glowing at the fact. Oh, client, like working. I just want to work out now. Screw this interview. I'm going to the gym. That's
Got them at rest days.
that's one way to do it. If you could live anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Japan or Korea?
Nice, nice. If you could have lunch with any one person, who would it be?
Ooh. Well, at the moment, I just read a really great book by, I think it's Adam Grant. So let's go with him.
Okay. And
I thought it was really interesting.
what was the book about? Like, did you tell us about who Adam Grant is?
Yeah, so I think that's the right name, I'm pretty sure. But he wrote a book called The Queen is Dead. And yeah, it's kind of about, well, I guess maybe colonization in a way.
Interesting.
Which was, yeah, a very interesting read. And yeah, just the way that he wrote and the story that he told was almost like poetry, but as a story in a book, and it was just really
selling it very well. There you go.
Yeah, the way his brain works is really amazing.
That's got to get you a lunch date with him straight away, like selling it like poetry. Damn, there you go.
Amazing.
I will find him and we'll flick it through to him. What is the weirdest instruction a coach ever gave you?
Once I was doing speed training in Japan with the Japanese team, and he said that, I think it must have been a bit of a translation thing, but he said, "You're really lucky because you can improve a lot," which I think was kind of very foreign to us, because in a way that would be quite rude.
I was going to say, it kind of sounded like, "You're shit, so you can get better at least."
Yeah, which was kind of like, oh, but then also made a lot of sense in a way, you know, if you were doing already the best you could do and you couldn't improve, of course that's not helpful.
Yep.
So it kind of opened my mind up to I don't know, yeah, different ways of thinking about training, which was very humbling, but cool.
Sometimes, what did we say? You need that negativity to get the positivity, and sometimes it just comes in the form of saying that. The last one I ask you today, which is kind of weird to ask this question, because again, like, I just feel so old talking to someone at your age because you're so young. But when you were little, what was one thing you always thought? Now, this is such an open-ended question. Like, I literally, we've had people answer this. I thought I was always hungry. Like, you know, like something basic. But was there one thing that you can think of when you were little that you always thought?
What did I always think?
We ask the tough questions on this show to close it out.
I always thought that onions were gross. Still to this day.
And still do.
Yeah, still to this day. I wish I liked them, but I just don't. Yeah.
Hey, look, you know, you like what you like. And maybe one day you'll just wake up and you go onion and you'll eat it. Like, you never know.
I'm really hoping so. I'm really hoping so.
I actually admire the fact that there's something you don't like and you're like, I hope I do. Like, I've hated peas and corn my entire life and I hope I never liked them because to me they look disgusting. But I like the fact that you want to change.
Peas and corn is like one of my favorite things.
Ah, see, I've offended her right at the end. Whoops.
Wow.
Damn.
Wow. I'm leaving. I'm getting off this.
Clearly, Jim. Cherry, all that's got to improve it. Osh, before I let you go, though, obviously people want to follow the journey between now, the vlog, the social media, everything along those lines. Where can people follow you, stay up to date with everything before Paris?
Yeah, so my Instagram is Oceana_climbing. And if you just look up Oceana McKenzie on YouTube, you can follow me there.
Easy.
And also on TikTok.
And you're on TikTok too, right?
Yes, little bit. Not as regularly, but
look,
I'm there.
We feel cool because we have a TikTok now. So we will flick your follow. So, hey.
Amazing. Thank you.
We're down with the kids. That's all I can say. Osh, it has been an absolute honor to chat with you and learn about your journey and everything along the lines. Good luck for Paris. We're going to be watching you with anticipation to see how you and obviously Campbell do at the Olympics. And we'll get you back on afterwards with that shiny gold medal around your neck. How does that sound?
Can't wait. Thank you so much.
And an absolute massive honor to have Oceana on the show. Thanks very much for her time and for that chat. If you want to see the video version, of course, of this interview, you can head to our YouTube channel, which you're already going to be on anyway, because you're going to be looking up her vlog. That's what you want to do now that you've heard this chat with her. So look that up. But a great chat there with Osh, learning everything about the sport, coming over, sort of some mental demons after Tokyo to sort of go through that burnout to try and push her towards a second Olympics, which, of course, as we know, she will be on that plane going to Paris. So very exciting to see that. And just the separation now of the events, of course, as we touched on there, that all three disciplines of sport climbing were combined, the bouldering, the lead, and the speed section. And of course, now it is going to be completely separate. So we will have the speed as its own event and then boulder and lead combined. And of course, Osh will be competing in the boulder and lead section alongside Campbell Harrison, who will be our guest next week on the show. So we're going double when it comes to the sport climbing to make up for our 3-year absence from that. But check out our vlogs. They're fun. They're entertaining. And we're always down to following our athletes along the way to the journey and particularly through social media and all these other great platforms that we can really get exposed to our Olympians out there in a way that we never have before. So check it out. And also, too, there is a great website for Osh if you want to check it out, oceanamackenzie.com. And that also will link you to all of her social media platforms as well if you wish to check out that out. And you can also donate to help her on her journey along the way when it comes to raising funds to getting her out there across the world and competing in various World Cups that she obviously touched on there as well. So if you head to her website, click on the donate section there, you'll be able to help her out along the way. Cal Harrison next week, though, continuing the sport climbing trend as well. He's making his debut at the Paris Olympics when it comes to sport climbing and sport in general. It's his first Olympics, so very exciting to learn more about him. So tune in for that one. Then after that, we're going back winter in terms of just taking a bit of a break, going to speak to a winter athlete, Jenny Owens. Now, that name might ring a few bells for Australian Olympic fans because Jenny Owens has had an esteemed career in not one but two different sports, if you don't mind. Competed at the Olympics in alpine skiing and then switched over to compete in freestyle skiing, if you don't mind. So she competed at Salt Lake Olympics in alpine skiing, where she competed in five different events, and then in Sochi and Vancouver switched over to ski cross. So an incredible athlete, an incredible journey, an incredible chat. So we've got that coming your way in a couple of weeks' time too. So be staying tuned for that one. And then after that, I've been teasing this one for a little bit, but I'm going to tease it again. We have an interview with a coach. Now, you might be thinking, okay, cool, a coach. This is a coach who has had an esteemed Olympic career before becoming a coach. This is an athlete who is an Olympic gold medalist and is his nation's only ever Olympic gold medalist and Olympic medalist in general. This man is the only person from his entire country who has won an Olympic medal. So if you looked up the medal tally of this country, it says one gold medal, this man won it. And now he is the coach of a team at the Olympics in Paris this year, whom with Australia will be competing with very closely. So there's a real teaser for you there. And I'm sure you're thinking of a variety of different sports, and I can guarantee you right now that you're not thinking of the correct sport. So it's a fascinating chat with a very fascinating individual, and I'm very excited to bring that one to you in a couple of weeks' time. Of course, if you never want to miss an episode, subscribe to the podcast. We're on Spotify. We're on Apple Podcasts. We're on Google Podcasts. We're on all the podcast platforms that you find podcasts on. Search for Off the Podium. While you're there, like, subscribe, and do everything else with it so you never miss an episode. And of course, leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear what you think of the show, as always. And while you're on there, get onto social media. You're already on YouTube. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, Facebook, Twitter/X, Instagram. And as I just touched on there, of course, TikTok. We're down with the kids. So that's what we do on there as well. Let us know what you think of the show. And we always appreciate your feedback and support along the way. Thanks again to Osh for her time. Thanks again for you for listening. Remember to say g'day to the Birmingham Bull. You took the words right out of my mouth. Put a sock in it, Mountain. And most importantly, remember to go left.